This is Larry Hardesty on ESPN New York, 98.7 FM.
Ladies and gentlemen, we were having old home week talking to Bobby Gonzalez. I remember Bobby when he was coaching the Manhattan Jaspers, and he and I at a different radio station far, far away were sitting in the window of Mickey Mantle's restaurant breaking down the Manhattan Jaspers. Wow. He's left me, went on to Seton Hall, you know, TV, radio, big superstar now. Bobby Gonzalez, how are you?
Larry, I'm great. Thank you for having me. Believe me, Larry, I haven't forgotten those days, and you're my man, and you've been doing great ever since, and you're still doing great.
Thank you. And every once in a while, I see him up at Nick practice trying to help the coaches out, running some plays. Listen, you know, I saw this guy here. Here's how you stop him. So you were doing some stuff there. Also, Coach, take me – first thing, we got a Michigan State-Virginia game right now. A little over 3:50 left for Michigan State with a 7-point lead. What is it about Sparty and Izzo? He's always in these games. Post it. Look, Jay Wright is apologizing how we didn't get to the second round again.
I know.
And Sparty is always here.
Larry, I tell you, there's a reason why in the coaching industry we call Tom Izzo Mr. March. Yeah. I mean, this guy, he, you know what, I tell you, Larry, the best way to put it in coaching terms is his teams do two things always. And this team here is not even a great version of a lot of the great Michigan State teams he's had. But his teams always defend and rebound, mm-hmm. no matter what. They may not always score. They may not always be sexy and pretty and fancy, but they defend and rebound. And we like to say in the coaching field that those two things travel well, defending and rebounding. Mm-hmm. They're great in neutral site buildings, and they're great in one game, 40-minute, you know, neutral site situations in the NCAA tournament. If you defend and rebound, you give yourselves a chance. Mm-hmm. So that may have something to do with it. And then the other thing is, it all comes down, as you know, to Larry, to matchups. And Virginia, who plays slow, who plays grind it out, just ran into the original play slow and grind it out, but Big Ten style with tackle football.
Yeah, it's interesting. 1-800-919-3776. I want to hear from the Knick fans, because Bobby's going to break down D'Angelo Russell for you. He's going to break down Carly Stein. He's going to break down Towns. He's going to break down Okafor. I know a lot of it. And it's funny because Okafor was – Knick fans wanted Okafor early. But the more they've seen Towns, the less they want Okafor, Bobby. It's weird.
You know what I think that is, Larry, is when you watch Okafor play – you know, he probably needs to lose a little weight, get in better shape. He labors sometimes to get up and down the floor. Mm-hmm. He's sort of a throwback in that he's pretty much a low post type of center with a big butt, great hands, you know, mm-hmm. great footwork. You know, not a type of guy that comes along that often. I mean, certainly a special player. You know, he's a horse. He's a load down there. But I think what happens is when you see Carl Towns, you know, you see, you know, Dominican kid from New Jersey who's kind of like a New York. He's from the metropolitan area. He has a little more flair. He runs the floor a little better, you know, a little more skilled, can step out, can make jumpers. So probably what the Knicks fans see is here's a guy that they can envision, and they see him maybe fitting in better in Phil Jackson's triangle or the style of a skilled big man who can, you know, do more things. And Jahlil Okafor is kind of like, again, like a he's sort of like a Tim Duncan a little bit, but yet a little more of a center type, whereas Tim was more of a power forward. So it's an interesting comparison, but I agree with you, Larry. It seems like everybody loved Okafor early, and now they're talking more about Towns.
But for me, as a kind of a defensive guy, quote unquote, Macaulay Stein impresses me in the sense of I can find a score. I can find a scoring big man. I can find a scoring guard. I can find scores. But guys that defend the rim, and I know he's limited offensively, but I can work with him, Bobby. Give me a guy that defends the rim. We had a Chris Herring on earlier, and he's watched him for a couple of weeks. And he says when they put him on a point guard, listen, when you can guard a point guard with that versatility, I like that.
No doubt about it, Larry. You know what Knicks fans maybe can sort of think back? You remember Marcus Camby's role on the Knicks teams that were winning?
Yeah.
I think Willie Cauley-Stein has that same type of, you know, obviously Marcus was a little better offensively, mm-hmm. and Willie Cauley-Stein is still a little raw offensively, but he runs the floor. He's got that pogo stick, that energy level, that defensive intensity. Like mm-hmm. you say, Larry, he could switch out on guards. He can guard out on the floor. He's a versatile defender. So that's a unique talent in itself. So you probably can't go wrong. You know, the Knicks could probably use any one of the three.
Yeah.
You know, but I like Cauley Stein too. He makes free throws. He's got good hands. He could play the top of the press. He, you know, he's a, well, this is the reason why, you know, Coach Cal's 36-0.
Yeah, absolutely.
He has two of the top three centers in the country.
Don't want to take anything away from John Calipari's ability to coach. I don't. But Bobby, he's an outstanding recruiter. And when you recruit, you have that your margin for error becomes huge because you can do different things. He had a cut where he said that he's enjoyed coaching this team because these guys, they made their adjustments on themselves. Yeah, sure, because they're talented. And obviously the coaching, I'm not taking away from the coaching.
Right.
But I'm saying when you have this kind of talent that provides matchup nightmares for other teams around the country, Bobby, it makes your life a little easier.
Well, there's no doubt. You know, I did a column recently for Chris Sheridan for Sheridan Hoops, and I mentioned in the column, the first paragraph, I said, I heard this one time from Mr. Garfinkel 30 years ago, and I never forgot it. He said, you could be a great coach. I mean, you could be a great recruiter and a fair coach, and you will survive. But you could be a great coach, I mean, a bad recruiter, and you'll get fired. So yeah. There's a lot to say about getting the right players. And it's you want to be both. And it's not to say that John Calipari is not a great coach, because he is. He's going to be a Hall of Fame coach. I mean, he took Memphis and UMass to Final Fours. The guy can flat coach. But as you mentioned, Larry, when you get the players, when you got that kind of talent, everybody else in the country is dealing with the whole thing about parity and that kind of thing. John Calipari's roster is not – he's not dealing with parity. He's dealing with 7 or 8 McDonald All-Americans. They're all pros. I mean, even the guys, Trey Lyles and, you know, Trevor Booker and the kid Tyler Ulis, those kids, they're going to be NBA players.
Sure.
I mean, he's got guys that are all going to make money. And that's – when other teams in the tournament go to their bench, they get a little smaller. They get a little weaker. Mm-hmm. They can't sustain. When Kentucky goes to their bench, they're bringing in – More troops that they take a lead. Yesterday, the Cincinnati game was tied. Kentucky goes to the bench. Cincinnati goes to the bench. Next thing you know, Kentucky's up 7.
Yeah. It's similar to the Georgetown teams of the 80s.
That's right.
When John Thompson, you know, other guys went to the bench, and then you come back, it's like he had a wave of Hoyas. Like every time you turn around, these guys, they press you, they wear you down. It was amazing.
No doubt about it, Larry. And so he's got a unique thing going at Kentucky. I mean, you know, I sort of knew that when he went there. You know, you said to yourself, man, if this guy got to the Final Four at UMass, he got to the Final Four at Memphis, he's been sort of at out-of-the-way places and out-of-the-way leagues. If now he gets to the what we used to joke and call Kentucky the Roman Empire, of college basketball, if you put John Calipari, you know, in charge of Kentucky, man, what's going to happen? And sure enough, he's getting, you know, NBA guy after NBA guy. He's in the mix every year for a national championship. He's already won one with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
He's got DeMarcus Cousins. He's put John Wall, Derrick Rose. I mean, look at these guys he's putting. Well, Derrick Rose was at Memphis, but look at the Kentucky guys he's already put in the league. So he's got something really special going on right now, Larry. It's not something you see every day.
Not at all. 1-800-919-3776. Knick fans, you can get your personal scouting report on who they should draft. Should they go small? Should they go big? Talk to Bobby Gonzalez. Also, how about you trying to fix your not that you could do anything with your brackets now. I know mine is a shambles, but maybe Bobby can talk you off the ledge a little bit. You know, we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about why does Jay Wright and Villanova struggle in the second round when they play well going in. We'll talk about that in just a couple of minutes. Hey, the Garden of Dreams Foundation is offering extraordinary experiences to help raise money for kids in need. Visit Charity Buzz now to bid for your chance to, well, visit the Howard Stern Show. Maybe you want to play tennis with John McEnroe. Perhaps you want to attend the Tribeca Film Festival. And maybe you want to meet Robert De Niro. You can have all those and more. The auction runs through March 31st. Visit charitybuzz.com/Garden of Dreams right now. More of the Larry Hardesty Show, Sunday edition, next on ESPN New York, 98.7 FM.
This is Larry Hardesty on ESPN New York, 98.7 FM.
Michigan State leading Virginia 57-49, 34.5 seconds left. Bobby, talk to me. Why did I pick Virginia in my bracket when I knew what was going to happen with Tom Izzo? Because it happens every year.
Probably because, like everybody else, Virginia's a 2 seed. They you know, were unbelievable all year in the ACC. They have some incredible wins. Tony Bennett's done a fantastic job. And, you know, Michigan State, this was kind of an average Tom Izzo team. And now Denzel Valentine, I think, is a special player, but he doesn't have a lot of name guys on this team. So to be honest with you, Larry, you're with a lot of other people, to be honest.
Yeah, I am. I am with a lot of other folks. But what Is it something this year, Bobby? I mean, what, first day? My bracket was done.
I know.
Half the first day.
Well,
Baylor goes down. Iowa State goes down. What?
I've heard people say, you know, even coaches that have followed it for 20 years say that this year, it's been called March Madness, of course, for years. But this year, it's even madder and even crazier. I mean, opening day, as you know, there was, you know, 5 1-point games, which is the most in one day in NCAA tournament history. Right now, I'll tell you, I'll make some points here, Larry. You got the ACC, which we knew when the UConns and Syracuses and Notre Dames and Louisvilles of the world left the old Big East to join the new ACC, that this league was going to be a conglomerate.
Yeah.
And now it's starting to kick in, Larry. The ACC right now is 9-0. The Pac-12 is right now 7-0, and I don't think a lot of people had that. And then the Big East, which is the new Big East. I'm certainly not knocking it. I'm an East Coast guy. I once coached in the Big East. But the new Big East really took a hit. They put six teams in, and right now they only have Xavier left. Five teams got knocked out in the opening 2 weekends. But you look at that East bracket, Larry, and it just got all discombobulated. It just got crushed.
It was. Yeah, I know. You're telling me. I know. It did get crushed. It's crazy. It is. And, you know, once again, 25 seconds left. Michigan State with a 6-point lead over second seed Virginia. And we got another upset, and I think about this tournament, and I just don't understand. Jay Wright is a tremendous coach, Bobby. He during the season, this team plays well, but they get to the tournament and the second round, and it's something that bothers him. And here's what he had to say about not making it to the second week.
You know, Big East tournament did a good job here. You know, I always look at tournaments as matchups. You know we have to answer to the fact that we did not get to the second weekend again. We have to own that. But it's not going to define us, you know, within our program. It's going to define us outside of our program, and we accept that.
Now, what hurt me is not only that they lost because I picked them to win, but having been born in North Carolina and in a staunch Tar Heel. You know, it's Tar Heel for me. North Carolina State, I tolerate. Duke is unacceptable. I do not like Duke because you can't. You know, so that's how
right.
It is for me.
It's either one or the other.
It's one or the other. But for him to lose to North Carolina State, he got me both times. So what is it that doesn't happen, Bobby, as you look at it? I know you're not there every day, but what happens that they just don't get in that second round?
Well, it's a very good question, Larry, and it's a hard question because, again, you know, I mean, I love Jay. Again, we coached together, and we won a gold medal in USA basketball together in Izmir, Turkey years ago. Jay's a wonderful guy. I think he's, an elite-level coach. It's funny. I studied his team. I love his team. I, too, Larry, picked him to go to the Final Four. I think maybe the thing that really hurt them was, you know, they certainly have great personnel, great guards, very good outside shooting team. And even as Charles Barkley pointed out, you know, on some of the stuff after the game, sometimes, Larry, when you get in the tournament and it's a 40-minute single-game elimination situation, if you have a bad shooting night, and this is not to say Jay's teams don't do other things, because they do. They defend. They pass the ball well. They do all these other things. But I think sometimes when you don't make threes or you rely on the jump shot or you're perimeter guard-oriented, They probably got against a bad matchup. NC State, they had the kid, I hope I can say his name right, I think it's Malik Abu. He had 12 points, 13 rebounds. He really destroyed him inside. Unbelievable athlete. They had the other kid, Leonard Freeman. They really pounded him. They out-rebounded him, Larry, by 13 rebounds.
Wow.
They really hurt him in the paint. And then they had the power guard, Trevor Lacy, who transferred from Alabama. So I think what happened with this specific Villanova team was They proved themselves. They won the regular season. They won the Big East tournament. And I think that the pressure builds, and they knew they had to get over the hump. And they got in a battle where they didn't shoot well. They didn't play particularly well. And NC State, who had nothing to lose, no pressure, was a very bad matchup for them because they really hurt them inside. So I don't know, Larry, if it's an every year thing. I think it's just not coincidence either, but I think it's just Jay is known for having perimeter-oriented teams, really good guards, not a lot of size. And I think he's gotten into the NCAA where he's had to face some really tough inside teams.
1-800-919-3776. Bobby Gonzalez with me, taking your phone calls about the NCAA tournament. Want to hear from the Knick fans? He's going to break down the guys. He already did. He talked about the three big men. Maybe I'll convince him to talk a little bit about D'Angelo Russell, and we've got some guys that like Moutier, who's overseas. I don't know if his game will translate to the NBA, and he's playing in China. So we have a number of things on the table to talk with Bobby Gonzalez with. Let's go to Dom in Jersey. Dom, you're here on ESPN New York.
Hi, guys. How you doing today?
What's happening, Dom?
You know, Bobby put it perfectly with Villanova. I happen to watch the game. Villanova lives and dies by the three. Any college basketball fan who watches their games, and I'm a big one, knows it. And especially with the NCAA tournament, I want to talk about how bad the officiating has been. Because if you watch SMU and UCLA, no way in shape or form was that a goaltending call, although we've had just some upsets here and there. I actually picked Duke to win the whole thing because I like their style. I love Okafor in the middle. I know you can't stand Duke.
It's okay, Dom.
But just trying to stay away from chalk. I mean, it's everybody, you know.
Sure.
You know, Kentucky's trying to win the whole thing. But, you know, the one thing with Arizona I watched last night, I mean, Arizona's defense is terrific. They're the only team, I think, and maybe Duke as well, but they're the only team who can match up defensively with Kentucky, and it should be interesting if they get into a national semifinal, and I thank you for taking my call.
All right, Don, we thank you for calling in. Bad admittance by me. I have Duke playing Kentucky in the final because that's how my board ended up.
Well, Larry, to piggyback off that, the last caller, I heard the Bruce Pearl interview earlier where he picked three teams that he thinks can beat Kentucky. And I actually agree with two of the three. You're going to hate my third. I love also agree with the Arizona pick. I love Arizona's they have great starters. Gabe York's an X-factor coming off the bench, three-point shooter. They don't have great depth, but I love their pieces. The point guard, T.J. McConnell. The two guards, Stanley Johnson's a lottery pick. The three-man, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, tremendous defender. The four-man, Brandon Ashley, who broke his foot last year. And then Caleb Tarzewski. So they have great pieces. Sean Miller, terrific coach. So I love Arizona. Love Wisconsin. Bo Ryan, his style of play. Frank Kaminsky. The third team, instead of Gonzaga, who I like, but I'm not as high on Gonzaga as everybody else, I like Duke is the third team with a chance. And even though they don't have the depth inside, besides Okafor, I love the fact, Larry, that they have Quinn Cook and Tyus Jones who can make threes. I think the way you're going to have to beat Kentucky, if it does happen, which I don't think it's going to happen in this tournament, but if it does, you got to do what Cincinnati did, and you got to slow it down and play zone. Duke is now starting to play some zone. So I like those three teams, but I agree with that last caller that Arizona maybe gives the field the best chance to beat Kentucky.
1-800-919-3776, your calls for Bobby Gonzalez. When we return, we'll take your phone calls. Plus, Bobby, I'm going to ask you, as a head coach, how you deal with this situation.
Yeah, I feel I should address it this time. I lost my mother this morning to a heart attack, and it was kind of a tribute to her. It was really a special night. She, 84, former Olympic swimmer, an unbelievable woman, a woman ahead of her time, and probably the real driving force, you know, behind everything I've done. And so it was an interesting day, to say the least, and I felt I should at least address that. And I think she was definitely with us down the stretch.
That's the voice of Notre Dame coach Mike Bray, who did not tell the team before the game that his mom passed away. How would Bobby Gonzalez deal with that as a head coach? That's next on ESPN New York 98.7 FM.
This is Larry Hardesty on ESPN New York 98.7 FM.
Bobby, before the break, I played the audio from Mike Bray, head coach of Notre Dame, who lost his mom before the game yesterday. He didn't tell his team. He won the game and then talked to the team afterwards. Couple things. As a coach, is there a right way or a wrong way to handle it? Or is that just a feel thing, how you feel how it's going to make your team react? If it's a situation? If it's a regular season game, would you have told them, as opposed to a tournament game where you really don't want them to lose focus? How do you handle that?
Well, I tell you, it's a good question, Larry. And I think what you said about feel is probably the best thing you have to rely on as a coach. You know, nobody knows your team better than you. So I agree with everything Mike Bray did. He's such a class guy and a good coach. He handled it perfectly. I really believe, I would like to think I could have handled it exactly the way he did.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you know, don't tell the team because you don't want to put your own personal thing on them and make them feel some added pressure that they already got enough, you know, maybe already, you know, thinking about going into the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part is that, you know, you want to see how things turn out because you don't want to, you know, kind of straddle them with that type of. So I love what Mike Bray did. It doesn't surprise me because he's such a humble guy that he would, you know, sacrifice. But then you yourself are saying to yourself, you want to win the game deep down for your mom, for the loss of your loved one. But you, again, you want to keep that private. I think that's kind of private. I have two examples I can give, Larry, as a college player. My father passed away. I was 18 years old. He wanted him and my mom wanted me to go to the game that night. I did. I played the game. I didn't tell my teammates till after the game. I literally came in the locker room, almost collapsed. I'll never forget it. And I was happy that I didn't put that on the team or the coach or whatever. And then this is more on the other side of the coin, Larry, a positive thing. When we played Princeton, the day of the game, I had my daughter, Brooke, and my wife let me leave the hospital, of course, to go coach in the game that night. And I had a pink tie on, and I got there out of a car service, and my senior, John Garcia, grabs me and says, "Coach, what's up?" He goes, "I see you didn't ride the bus with the team like you always do, and then you came in with a pink tie on." He goes, "Something's up. Is there some news you want to give us?" And I'm like, "No, John, don't worry about that. I'll tell you after the game." So when the game ends, they all come in the locker room. They're like, "Coach, what's up?" I'm like, "Fellas, I can tell you now because we won the game." I said, "Thank you for helping us win the game on the day that my daughter Brooke was born." And they laughed. But so I guess I can relate to it, Larry, from a good side and a bad side. The best way, I think, to handle it is keep it amongst yourself, deal with your team, deal with the matter at hand, coach your game, and then afterwards, you know, let everybody know. But it really is truly special to see Mike Bray win that game. You know, you feel good. You know, it's like, you know, you say to yourself, you know there's a God when good things happen to people like that.
Absolutely. 1-800-919-3776. Rodney in Brooklyn, you're next on ESPN New York.
Yes, good afternoon, guys. I'm actually calling. I feel like the tournament is sort of up in the air, considering what Kentucky does. And I know that sounds a little odd, but I think they're the most complete team as far as being able to play different styles. And as we know in the tournament, styles make fights, if you will. And I believe that they probably are the more complete team in being able to play an up and down style, a half court style, or a very defensive, aggressive style of play. And I think that's what gives them an advantage. Not necessarily that they can go 10 deep, because I think in the tournament, depth isn't so much of a factor because the games are so much slowed down, an NBA type game where it becomes more of a half court rather than an up and down. But I believe that overall, one of the other things that helps them is that they go 10 deep and that at any night, any of those guys could get hot. And I think that's what's most important. If their star people or the starting five aren't hot, they bring in another five, and maybe one of those guys gets hot. And so that's what makes them, I think, extremely dangerous for the tournament. Thank you.
All right, Rodney, thanks a lot. I agree with that, but I do think here's where the depth comes in, Bobby. Any given night, you can get foul trouble with your guys. Now you got to go to that bench. And the fatigue factor and everything else, I think the fact that you can go 10 deep, whether you have to, okay, you don't, but that you know you can, once again, it leaves you a big margin for error.
Well, Larry, think about this. Early in the year, a lot of people forgot this. Alex Poitras, who was an all-league, all-SEC junior who came back for Coach Cal, who's basically the NBA, he's on the NBA radar. I think he tore his ACL or was it Achilles? I'm a little confused, but he got hurt and he was, and he's out for the year. So they lose one of the guys that Coach Cal thought was going to be one of their, you know, junior leader, captain, you know, tough, do everything glue guys.
Mm-hmm. They ACL.
His ACL. Mm-hmm. They lose him. And, you know, of course, Trey Lyles, again, Trevor Booker, who's their deep range shooter, Tyler Ulis, the backup point guard, he comes in. Of course, the Harrisons come back, Harrison twins, and also Willie Cauley-Stein. All those guys returned. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people get confused about this Kentucky team, and they say, oh, well, they have 9 or 10 McDonald All-Americans, which they do. Mm-hmm. They have 9 or 10 potential NBA guys, which they do. Mm-hmm. But everybody gets confused saying they have 9 or 10 one-and-done guys. They don't have 9 or 10 one-and-done guys. They have, you know, Willie Cauley-Stein, who's now a junior. They have the Harrison twins, who are now juniors. They had Poitras, but he got hurt. Mm-hmm. And then they have the freshmen that have come in and combined with the veteran guys. So it's an interesting team because they have a lot of balance. And that's what I think people are missing on with this team. And I think that's why they're so special and they got a chance to make history.
Are they going to be, if they make history, are they going to be, how do you rank them? How do you rank them among, because there's people who will say, for me, for example, I mean, Wooden's teams in the 60s and 70s, Bobby, you got 88 straight wins. I mean, you got veteran guys who stayed there for 4 years. You got the Kareems and the Walton teams. And then you have the next wave where maybe they didn't do 4 years, but okay, I have to say, the Duke had some great teams, and North Carolina's had some great teams. The UNLV team in 91 is a great team. Do we have to put an asterisk next to this to say, well, in this era of one and done, Are they great? I mean, you have to give them some credit because they're undefeated. All right. Every night, somebody, it's like being undefeated and everything else. Every night, somebody's, you make their season. If they beat you, I've made my season. We're the only team to beat Kentucky this year. So I want to give them props. I just don't know how to do that, but I realize how special it is. I mean, Bobby, I was in high school when Bobby Knight in that 76 team won with Kent Benson and Quinn Buckner and Scott May. So I don't know how to identify it.
Well, Larry, I think you hit it, you know, right on the money. It's like comparing great fighters from different eras. You know, you'll hear people say Muhammad Ali, you know, maybe versus Joe Louis. It's so hard. You know, I think the point that I would point out, Larry, that you touched on is, if they go to 40-0, I definitely think they earn the right to go down in history. Definitely. Because mm-hmm. in their era, like you say, and at their time, what they've done hasn't been done in 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, to say they're the greatest ever, I would have a hard time with that too. Because what I'm looking at, Larry, is you're talking about young men versus men. Back in the day when, you know, some of these teams kept guys in school for 3-4 years and they were juniors and seniors, you know, those guys were men. I mean, when Dean Smith had that team with Sam Perkins and James Worthy and Michael Jordan, I mean, these guys, you know, Michael left early, but he left after his junior year. Mm-hmm. You know, Sam and James and some of these guys might have left early, but it was leaving early then was after your junior year.
Yeah.
It wasn't after your freshman year.
No.
So when I look at this Kentucky team, I say, well, if they go 40-0, they're going to be one of the greatest teams of all time, but I wouldn't be able to call them the greatest of all time because I look back and say you're comparing young men against teams that had men that stayed around for 3 and 4 years, like Larry Johnson, the UNLV team with mm-hmm. Coach Tark. So that's the caveat right there, Larry, that I think, you know, separates.
It is interesting, and it's a great discussion. You can weigh in on that discussion with us, 1-800-919-3776. I want you to hear what Jay Billis had to say. He kind of agrees with you, Bobby, about the one-and-done hate that is labeled on Kentucky.
It's not that they're turning their backs on education. They don't believe in education. Oh, my God, this is awful. It's a mockery of education. It's not. They're getting a better offer. All right, 6 guys on this Kentucky roster came back and didn't go pro. 2 of them came back twice.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that they're all a bunch of one-and-dones is clearly not true because half their roster came back. Now, maybe some of the guys will come back yet again, and some of the guys in this class. I don't think this entire class is going to go pro. Some of them will come back. So the idea they're all one-and-done just isn't true. So the thing of us saying, well, they should keep them in for 2 years. The NBA should pass their rule, keep them in for 2 years. Well, that's already been accomplished at Kentucky for a good many of these guys.
Mm-hmm. So Jay Billis agrees with Bobby Gonzalez. When we return, where does this Kentucky team stack up against the 91 UNLV team? Well, Bobby Hurley was on with Ian O'Connor today. He'll share his thoughts, plus we'll talk to you at 1-800-919-3776. It's the Larry Hardesty Show on ESPN New York, 98.7 FM.
This is Larry Hardesty on ESPN New York, 98.7 FM.
There's some great basketball teams that obviously you could think of. And for a one-year period, there's no question that this team has got to be considered. If they do what they've done and remain undefeated, you got to put them right up there. You really do.
Absolutely, Larry, because, again, all you can judge and base your team on and is what you have in front of you. You know, John Calipari is saying, hey, look, whoever's in front of us, if we beat whatever team we're playing on that day for 40 straight games, I mean, going undefeated is going undefeated. It's something that, like you said, the last time it happened, it was 1976. There's a reason why it's hard to do, and there's a reason why it hasn't happened in 30 years, because it's very difficult. You get guys turn an ankle, referees blow the whistle, somebody's having a bad shooting game, the other team plays lights out. I think the biggest key is the best way to put it, and I think Jay Billis may have said something like this, is if Kentucky is at their best and they are at their best every game out for, let's put it this way, now we're down to 4 games left for mm-hmm. them to mm-hmm. make history. If they're at their best for the next 4 games, I don't believe anybody's going to beat them, even if that other team is at their best. Because I think Kentucky's best versus everybody else's best, Kentucky will cut down the nets. Now, again, that doesn't always happen. If Kentucky has one game where they struggle and they don't shoot it well, and I think what Cincinnati did showed a little bit of an Achilles heel for at least a half, which was They played a matchup zone. They played a possession game. They attacked the offensive glass and kind of banged with them inside. They didn't back down. They were fearless. They were aggressive. They took it right at them. I think that's the way you have to play Kentucky. Unfortunately, Cincinnati didn't have enough offense to go with that defense. Mm. And that's where Kentucky is so tough, Larry, because you have to do about five or six things well to beat them. And then they have to do three or four or five or six things not well for them to lose. So when you put all these things together, it is a difficult thing to beat this Kentucky team this year in this tournament.
You and Billis must be on the same wavelength.
There are a lot of things that you have to do well to beat Kentucky.
Right.
We saw them in the Bahamas this summer when they looked, you could see this coming, that they were going to be the best team. You've got to have a great game, and I think Kentucky has got to play less than their best, because if Kentucky plays their best, they are winning this thing. They are winning it.
You know what you're talking about. 1-800-919-3776. Let's go to the phones. Stephen in Manhattan, you're next on ESPN New York.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my calls, guys.
Thanks for calling, Stephen. What you got?
Well, listen, I just have to tell you, I'm an 84 alum from Manhattan. Coach Gonzalez was there in the glory years. That year we beat 2004. We beat David Lee and Coach Donovan. And I've heard his name bandied about for the Fordham job. A lot of people say it's a dead-end job. I just wanted to know if Coach thought he could win at that Fordham job.
All right, Stephen, thanks for the phone call. Now, let me just say this. I'm handling all of Bobby Gonzalez's inquiries about his job. So don't, make sure you check with me first. No, go ahead, Coach.
Well, I'll have to tell you, Larry, the first person I'll have to go to besides you is my wife.
That's the boss. That's the boss.
No, it's an excellent question. You know, it's funny, Larry. You know, it's easier to handle that question now than when I was at Manhattan or Seton Hall and people see you as a hot commodity and you're winning, and then people ask you that question, and I always learn from Pete Gillen that the best job is the one you have.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I've been out for a couple of years and I've had a chance to step away, I love what I'm doing, and but I'm intrigued. The Fordham situation, that I think they're in the Atlantic 10. They have a great administration. It's close to my house. It's a very interesting job. I think that the last couple of years I've been very interested in, if I do get back into coaching, I've always said that I want to coach in the NBA. I really haven't thought a lot about going back to college. But the Fordham situation is interesting because it's in the Atlantic 10, and I do think the right guy can win there. Now, my big caveat with this whole thing, Larry, whether it's Fordham or any of these Catholic schools, especially in the metropolitan area, they have to know who they want to be.
Hmm.
In other words, if you're going to be in the Atlantic 10 with VCU and these teams, and Tommy Pecora is a good guy and he's a good coach and he did a great job at Hofstra, and I'm not knocking them for letting him go. Maybe they felt, he didn't win enough games. You have to say, all right, do we want to, who do we want to be? That doesn't mean you have to sacrifice academics or, bring in kids that are going to embarrass the university or anything like that. But what it means is, do you want to make a commitment to winning and, trying to be up there with these other teams in the Atlantic 10, like Dayton, like VCU and Rhode Island and these other teams? And if you do, then, then it becomes more interesting, Larry, for whoever it is that might be interested in the job.
Do you miss coaching?
Larry, it's funny.
Especially this time of the year, do you miss it more?
It's funny. I was going to say to you, being able to spend time with my 88-year-old mother up in Binghamton, my daughter, who I once in a while get to take her to school, and being around my wife more, I've said to my wife many times, Tracy, for 18 straight years in Division I, I didn't get home for Christmas or Thanksgiving, and I didn't really feel like I was really a human being. Now that I'm around more, it's nice because I feel like I can sort of pick and choose. But here's what I do miss, Larry. I miss the competitiveness and the finite thing of keeping score.
Mm.
What happens when you're a head coach and you have your own team, you get out there in the games, in the 30 games a year, or they're like, your examinations, and you either win or you lose. And, and you sit there and you go and you say to yourself, man, I do kind of miss that competitive thing about, it's a simple thing of, did we win or did we lose? I miss that part of it. And I miss, Larry, having my own team.
Yeah.
But the recruiting part of it, the academics, the NCAA, all the other stuff, the people killing you, every day when you come in, no one's ever happy. It's hard to please everybody. You kind of don't miss those days.
I hear you. 1-800-919-3776. Sean in Jersey City, you're next on ESPN New York.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great.
I got two issues. One is that, we talk about collegiate sports. We talk about athletes. And I just heard you guys talk about Catholic schools, and I'm a Patriot League athlete from a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Are we missing the whole boat when we talk about viewership and teams like Kentucky are we really losing the sense that it is about college? While it's a means to an end, aren't there other things besides just the performance and just basketball when you talk about these athletes?
So, Sean, you're saying that we're not talking enough about the education part of it. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, I think we missed that part, that it is an education, albeit some of the athletes, this is their path to go to the NBA, whatever. But aren't we responsible for the end product as well?
Oh, there's no question, Sean. And I'll let Coach speak for a second. In a second, yeah, we are. We have to make sure that these students understand that their God-given talents are in exchange for an educational scholarship, not in place of the educational scholarship. And that's what we know. The thing is now, though, with the advent of the internet and whatnot, you could leave early and then get your degree in the off-season, Coach, online and with your institution and go back. And I think what happens is we don't hear enough about the players who do go back. Players go back. We just don't hear enough about that they went back. So then it seems like we're just talking about them from a one-dimensional standpoint.
Well, that's what happens, Larry. You know, of course, here's the thing that most people and the regular fans may lose sight of. These guys we're talking about, the Jahlil Okafors, the Karl Anthony Towns, they're sort of a special case. There's only a certain amount of those guys every year in college basketball, and they're doing a specific thing for their university. It would be like playing the cello. They're bringing a specific talent to that university that, yes, it brings in a lot of money come NCAA tournament time and things like that. And that money can build a library, can help the university, can help with the enrollment, can pump up the amount of people that want to go to your school. Georgia State, RJ Hunter just helped put Georgia State on the map. So there's a lot of good things that sports do for your school. So if they work in concert, the thing that people may miss out on is you can do both. You can have good students, good academics, good graduation rate, and still play highly competitive basketball. Harvard from the Ivy League is in the NCAA tournament. Stanford, these great universities, Georgetown, University of Virginia, I was an assistant coach there. I mean, there's many great academic institutions, and they're in the NCAAs. What happens is, Larry, is you don't hear a lot of stuff about the other part of it, the amount of guys that don't make the NBA, the other guys that get degrees, the time that's spent with the tutors and the effort that everybody puts in to make sure, you know, these kids do well and that it's their decision they make is not for the next 4 years, it's for the next 40 years. So you got to take your hat off to the local schools like a Fordham, a Manhattan, St. John's. I was at Seton Hall. These are all great schools. And I got to tell you, Larry, there's not as much nonsense going on as people think. People may hear about some stuff here and there. Yes, there was some stuff at North Carolina. There's some stuff at some of these schools that maybe the academics get shortchanged. But for the most part, Larry, I really believe that the administrations and the coaches, they're trying to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And the kids that get the most publicity and the guys we're talking about right now, these are special stories. You don't have a lot of guys like D'Angelo Russell from Ohio State who's going to be one and done because he's such a spectacular player that he can't turn down the chance to be the third pick in the draft and make millions of dollars and take care of his family because if he comes back, he could get injured. And like you say, he can always come back and get his degree in the future.
I think, Bobby, it's about balance, and you can run your program, and I think people just think, as you said, that okay, if they must have nobody's going to class if that team is that good,
right?
And that's the perception, but no, they have to. They're not eligible if they don't go to class. So,
that's right.
So you know, and yeah, you hear the stories. They're exceptions. They're not the norm. So I think that's what happens. And yeah, we need to hear the other side more, and then that would balance it out. More of your phone calls are next. It's the Larry Hardesty Show on ESPN New York, 98.7 FM.
This is Larry Hardesty on ESPN New York, 98.7 FM.
Coach, I always wanted to ask, and I kind of went through this at the pro level with Rex Ryan and the Jets last season because they were 4-12. And you have fans who are saying, look, come on. Lose all the games. We don't care. We don't, why are you playing these certain guys? Just lose. And at the college level, Coach, take me through that fine line where you want and need the player to come back. That would help your program a lot. But honestly, you also know, as you mentioned, in the D'Angelo Russell case, this kid gets hurt next year. It's going to hurt his career. You have the responsibility because out of all the people, except from family, these kids trust their head coach with their life.
Absolutely.
What's that thin line like?
Well, Larry, it really is incredible. It's a big part of leadership and being a coach that you have to be able to be selfless and sacrifice and put the young man ahead of your personal goals because, you know, like you say, Larry, there's a lot of pressure to win. You have the fans, the alumni, the media, the administration. You have a lot of, you know, people that are, you know, wanting great things. And when you get a special player like that, selfishly, you're tempted to say, man, you know, I want him to come back and help me win games.
Sure.
But on the other hand, you got to take a step back and say, geez, you know, this kid, you know, may come from a broken home or a bad financial situation. It's very hard to look at that young man and not say to him, hey, you know, you need to come out and take care of your family. You're going to be in the top five. You're going to be in a lottery pick. You've got to go out and take care of your family because what's happening, Larry, these kids are being taken on potential.
Right.
Now, where people get confused is they'll say, yeah, but coach, he's not really ready yet emotionally, physically, mentally. Maybe he needs another year of college. Listen, everybody could use another year of college. Everybody could use two or three more years of college. I'm not saying any of these guys are ready. Mm-hmm. But what happens is, Larry, if they're going to give them the money and they're going to take them on potential, then you can't tell the young man that he can't go out. You have to sort of push him out the door. Mm-hmm. And I think the key to that is, Larry, is that's where you got to do your homework and you got to do the research and call the GMs and call the agents and call the, you know, the NBA people and say, look, is he guaranteed a spot in the top 15? You know, mm-hmm. is he definitely going to go high? And then if you know that he's going very high in the lottery, then you have to sit down with the young man and his family and say, look, I got to give you the facts. Here's the facts. If you come out, you're going to be in the top 10. Here's the rookie salary scale. This is what kind of money you're going to get. Mm-hmm. If you come back, listen, we'd love to have you. We, you know, everyone knows you're going to be a great player again, but here's the risk of coming back. You know, you could get hurt. Your stock could go down. You know, these are things that could happen that could hurt your future. And then, you know, the educational part of it. Okay, we know that in order to stay eligible, you have to go to class, you have to keep your grades up, you know, and you have to continue to go to school and do a great job. Now, if you decide you're going to go pro, you can always come back later in the summers and work on getting your degree. So I think you owe it to the young man and his family, Larry, when you sit in the home and you promise the mother an education, you promise you're going to look out for their son, you also owe them the responsibility to be honest with them about where they stand in the draft picture.
The pressure of running a clean program, coach, which is, it sounds dumb, but there's a lot of pressure because you have pressure from alumni, you have pressure from boosters, you have pressure from the administration, who in a lot of cases, and I'm painting a broad brush here, I'm not picking on anybody, I'm painting a broad brush. There are administration people who are like, okay, take that kid. You don't win. All right, why'd you take that kid? You know that, you know what's going on with him. Why'd you take that kid? The pressure of that coach, it makes me wonder why people even want to coach college athletes.
It's a very good question, Larry.
Stressful.
So, sometimes when people ask me if I'm missing coaching, I ask myself that same question. Because, you know, Larry, you look at it like this. I try to say to people sometimes, I'll say, in the regular world, in real life, if you any business where people can get rich and famous, not saying coaches are in it to be rich and famous, but any field of life where, whether it's Wall Street or companies or business or any place, any area where there's a lot of money at stake, there's a lot of pressure, sports, there's a lot of pressure to win and lose, and people may look at college athletics and say, well, that's amateur athletics. Yes, it is, but there's a lot of money to be made. College coaches get paid millions. There's a lot of pressure to win. Universities make millions off of some of these young men. Any area that has that at stake, Larry, you may have some people that are going to cut corners. They're going to do things the wrong way. They're going to cheat. They're going to do things they shouldn't do. And I'm not justifying that, but what I'm saying, Larry, is basically what it comes down to is, as an individual, as a coach, you want to be able to sleep at night. You know, what can you yourself handle? It's like I used to say to our players, look, the best compliment I can give you is, can I trust you? Meaning, when we're not watching you, will you get up and go to class? When people aren't watching you, will you work on your game? Will you work on your body? Will you do the right thing when you're away from the team, the university, the school? And that's the best thing, you know, that's the same thing with coaches. If everybody doesn't know exactly what you're doing, you know, can the university or can people trust you to follow the rules and to do the right thing when you think people aren't looking. And then there's the thing, Larry, about can you live with yourself and what can you live with and still sleep at night and look at your wife or your daughter or this or that. And it is big business and there is a lot of pressure and it is hard. And when you hear stories about coaches cheating or taking a chance or whether it's changing grades or taking money or giving money or, you know, you hear these stories. I mean, Larry, we're being naive to say it doesn't exist. It does exist. I mean, it's out there.
How important is your relationship with your players, Bobby? You talked about the trust a minute ago. How important is that relationship where you're confident that they're going to tell you, some guy came up, coach, and approached me about taking some money, or this guy approached me about a car, or this guy approached me about something that would help me? Because whether I agree or disagree with whether athletes should be paid at the college level is a totally different story. The fact that they aren't opens the door up that they could be tempted.
That's a great question, Larry. And here's how I would say it is what happens is it's everything, the trust you have with your players, because this is what I always would say to people that sometimes when I was, you know, I was considered a great recruiter. John Calipari is considered a great recruiter. And what comes with that, Larry, when you're considered a really good recruiter is people, you know, when you have success like that, people get jealous. People take shots at you. Well, how is he so good? How did he get that guy? They must have cheated. They must have did something, you know, unethical. Well, here's my answer to that. I don't know how you could coach a young man if you paid him. I mean, it would seem to me that if you gave a player or his family or you did something illegal, how could you then coach that guy? I mean, yeah. you they would sort of kind of have you by the hair, so to speak, for lack of a better term. So, you know, I always say that, look, you know, when people knock John Calipari and try to say, well, he vacated Final Fours at Memphis and UMass. Look, John Calipari was never implicated by the NCAA himself personally. Mm-hmm. I think it's a lot of jealousy. When you win and you have success, people are going to take shots at you. So I think the relationship you have with your players, Larry, is everything, because if the players know, you can't fool them. They know if you care about them as a person. They know if you lied or you cheated or you told them not to follow the rules or you told them to, you know, to take a bribe or take money or do this or do that. So I just think the prestige and the peer pressure amongst themselves with their other teammates and the trust you have with your players is everything. And I think you break that trust if the players know, because you can't fool players, Larry. They can look at you and they respect you as a man. Because here's the thing, Larry, they want discipline. They want to be kids want to be coached.
And it's true.
And even though it isn't easy to tell them what they have to hear, not what they want to hear, kids know if you care about them. And if you tell them to cut corners, they really deep down, Larry, don't respect you. And I think you can't coach them and you can't be tough on them. And that's why I would always point to a guy like John Calipari and say, he's not a cheater because he can be tough on them. And if he cheated, he wouldn't be able to coach them and look them in the eyes and yell at them. That's what I believe, Larry.
I agree with you, Bobby. Great stuff. This ESPN New York Tournament Update brought to you by Bud Light. Bud Light, are you up for whatever? Already today, another hit to my bracket. Michigan State University defeated UVA. That's the University of Virginia, 60-54. Also in the first half, Duke, an 18-6 lead over San Diego State University. More of your phone calls with Bobby Gonzalez. We'll continue to talk college hoops until 3:30 next on ESPN New York, 98.7 FM.
This is Larry Hardesty on ESPN New York, 98.7 FM.
Bobby, talk to you enough. I got to share you with the callers.
Okay.
Otherwise, I can sit here and talk to you and just disregard the phone calls, but that's not good. I can't do that. Let's go to Steve in Long Island. Steve, you're next on ESPN New York.
Hi. I want to make three quick points on the issue of how the Kentucky legacy will be as a great team. One of the things we have to keep in mind is that some of those teams that we mentioned, UNLV and Duke and North Carolina, in terms of how great they are, we're looking through 2020 hindsight at how some of those players became great pros. And the story in Kentucky is yet to be told. The other thing is, I think it helps their legacy that they haven't had so-called grown men, because that's the point. They didn't get 2, 3, 4 years to work with some of these guys. So they made their accomplishment with less time. They did a 3 or 4 year career with juniors and seniors to accomplish being undefeated or a great team. Although I think my third point is I do think it's an advantage in the one and done era to get a disproportionate amount of great players compared to some of those other schools that didn't have the advantage of being able to recruit really great players who didn't plan to stay in school for a long time.
All right, Steven, thank you for your call. One thing I'll say, Bobby, before I let you get to it, he's right in a lot of cases. However, you talk to some NBA coaches, they would have wanted them to stay a little bit more. The NBA coaches, they're never prepared enough.
Steve, I agree with what Steve said, Larry. He made some great points, and you're right, Larry. Nobody really wants these guys to come out after 1 year. I don't think even the NBA or either side thinks it's the best thing. It's just the system and it's the way it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, we live in America and you want to say, well, you know, you get into this whole thing about when LeBron James was coming out of high school and I saw him, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
I had never seen a young man in high school as athletic as him. And I said, how could you keep him from going to the NBA? He's ready.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, like you said, Larry, they're really, the longer they stay, the mature they are, the better they are physically, mentally, emotionally. So you want to see. But again, if somebody says it's the age limit's 19, then that's what's going to happen. If they move it to 20, then that's what's going to happen. So really, it's just the system. And I also agree with the point he made about the job John Calipari, or he didn't really mention John Calipari, but he's right. That makes it even more remarkable to go undefeated or to do something like John's trying to do with a new team every year of five new guys and all these young kids.
Absolutely. Let's go to Kirk in Long Island. Kirk, you're next on ESPN New York.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Great.
Yeah, two quick points. I think they talk about Kentucky, and one of the main things they forget about, I think a lot of people forget about, the defense that they play is intense. And the deal is, and I think, Bob, you mentioned earlier how, you know, since they had the number in the first half, when you have guys that come in and they know they have 5 minutes to go super hard to get in your face for the entire time, knowing that you're going to get a break, that's when it wears down in the second half. They're going to be going hard because they know they're going to get a break and come back in. That's what wears teams down. The other point is, I don't think any team has the level of bigs that they have. For example, Carly Stein guarding in the perimeter. And even when you try to pack in and do what you do, when you have talented, agile bigs, it's hard to match up. So you talk about Duke and Okafor. Well, they have three Okafors. So what are you going to do with that? Yeah. So I think with that combined, I think that it's going to be almost impossible if they play the way they're supposed to play to hang in with them.
All right, Kirk from Long Island, thanks for your call. He's right, Bobby. Well, that versatility kills you.
He is, and you know what's interesting? To kind of sum up his point, we're talking a lot about Karl Anthony Towns and Willie Cauley-Stein, and rightfully so, because those are the guys that are going to be the highest picks of the, you know. But Dakari Johnson, by the way, is a 7-foot kid that comes off the bench for them who, if – you know, I never had a guy like that in my life. I mean, I would kill for Dakari Johnson. If I was still at, you know, wherever, I would be like calling up John Calipari saying, John, can I just borrow him for a few games? So Dakari Johnson's going to be in the NBA. He's another pro big man. But, you know, he's not being talked about a lot. Yesterday, he only played a certain amount of minutes because, again, they have 3 7-foot guys and they can all play. And nobody, you know, in college basketball has that kind of front line.
Alan Brooklyn, you're next on ESPN New York.
Hello?
Yeah, Al, you're on the air.
Hey, Larry, it's a long time I've spoken to you, so how you doing?
I'm doing great, Al. It's been a while.
Okay, real quick, right? I'm just going to make this point. The transition between college to the NBA, I knew this was going to happen. These young guys, they open up the floodgate, and now you don't get no consistent basketball from neither team from the West or the East. And the next thing is that the Knicks, they should be very embarrassed to have a great player in Carmelo Anthony and give him a coach like Derek Fisher. We've never had anybody that played the position so well besides Patrick Ewing. And all of the right, we need this, we need this, we need that. My whole thing is the college thing has to be a little more streamlined than just having these guys come in, because the money that they're paying them, even if they're coming from broken homes, regardless of the fact, these guys have to learn how to play the game. And you can't go to a game and watch a team like the Knicks, who has the greatest player in the world, still lose because he doesn't have anybody around him.
All right, Al, we thank you for your call. Some interesting thoughts there, Bobby. I'd say, just to sum it up, you want, even with a great player like Carmelo Anthony, if you put the right players around him, they'll be okay. He can teach them and they grow together. And I think that's what the Knicks are trying to do right now.
Larry, I agree with you. The key to, I think, getting good in the NBA is it isn't just, you know, the having a superstar. Of course, it's a superstar-driven league. You certainly need one or two of them to get in the, you know, to get all the way to the finals and that kind of thing and to win it. But you look at For instance, we talk about the Spurs all the time as an example because they've won four titles there. And they certainly do have some superstars, Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Ginobili. But the key is, like you say, Larry, building through free agency, building through the draft, the other guys, the great role guys, doing the right thing with the other pieces around your superstars, taking the right, like Atlanta Hawks have done with Kyle Korver and, you know, some of these other pieces they have put in there and why they've had such a successful year. And Golden State with, you know, certainly Steph Curry. And, you know, he's a special player. But they also have great other pieces. You mentioned Draymond Green off the record.
I love him.
We were talking about Draymond Green from Michigan State, by the
way. I can say it because I won't get in Charles' temper.
So I think that that's the big key. And going forward, you know, I'm certainly curious what Phil Jackson and the Knicks do and how they piece together who they have to put in with Carmelo Anthony. That's the big challenge. It's, yes, we're going to get a high draft pick. We know that. Now, what do they do through free agency? What free agents can they get? And what pieces can they put with Carmelo? That's going to determine success in the next 2-3 years.
Bobby, it's been fun. The time has gone too quickly.
Jeez, I tell you, Larry, I thought 90 minutes flew by. I guess they say it does fly when you're having fun. I hope I did a decent job.
You did a great job. And we'll invite you back.
Well, and I want to thank you for having me, Larry. It was
my
great.
Pleasure.
This is Larry Hardesty on ESPN New York 98.7 FM.